Hanukkah is around the corner, and Hanukkah always has been and is still my favorite holiday, not because of the sufganiyot, but because of its spiritual meaning. And every holiday that we have has a meaning to it. Most of the holidays that we have are in the Torah. Pesach and Rosh Hashanah and Shavuot, Sukkot, all these holidays are biblical holidays. There's a mystical reason for that. We gave a class not too long ago about the mystical part of Hanukkah, where I'm talking in general about it, but there are two holidays that are not biblical, which they are Purim and Hanukkah. And it's a very big question. I mean, we're celebrating Hanukkah because of a miracle, but there were millions of miracles in our history. Why is there not a holiday for that miracle? There's a miracle when we cross the ocean, the Dead Sea. There's so many miracles happening. Why Dafka Hanukkah and Purim? It was decided that it will be a holiday. Now, our sages teach us that when Mashiach is going to come very soon, we're not going to have holidays anymore. All the holidays will be cancelled, and at some point also all the mitzvot will be cancelled. But the holiday of Hanukkah and the holiday of Purim will remain forever. Now, every holiday that we have has a very spiritual meaning to it, because the word holiday in Hebrew is, you say, chagim. Chagim, the translation of chagim or chag is a holiday. Chagim is plural and chag is single. But the word chag comes from the word in Hebrew lachug, to go in a circle. And if you look at the old style clocks, the hands of the clock is called mechogim. So even the famous children song in Hebrew, it says uga 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 ba ma'agal nachuga. I mean, if you send your kids to kindergartens here, uga 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 is a cake. So they say cake cake cake. In the circle, we go in circles. Ba'ma'agal nachuga. Lachug is to go in circles. So the word chag is not the translation holiday. Rather, it comes from the root that something goes in a circle and comes back to the same point. So the holiday, the year goes around like a clock, and every year we go back to the same day, and this is the day that we mark a certain thing that happened in history. Now, it seems like we're celebrating the holiday because of an event in history, which is semi-correct. Yes, something happened in history at that time that we're commemorating it. But really, when comes a holiday, it's because every day there's a certain godly light that comes down to the world to light the world. Every day. And every day it's different. And every year it's different. And sometimes it comes from one source, sometimes it comes from a different source. For example, the easiest way to explain it, that during the week there's a certain type of godly revelation, and on Shabbos there's a completely type of godly revelation, what is called He'ara Elokit. So on auspicious days, like Yamim Tovim, there's a total different godly revelation, therefore we're not allowed to work. We have to stop from working. So on a holiday, there's a different type of godly light that comes down to the world. And like any auspicious time, like not too long ago was a Black Friday, people kill each other to get some electronic device because it's 90% off. It's an auspicious time, so all the prices drop. So same thing with us. Not only we're commemorating an historical event, there's a certain godly light that comes down to the world from a certain place that I have the opportunity to grab and to tap into. What will it do for me? It will boost me and energize me for the rest of the year with that particular godly power. One example out of many, that on the day of Pesach, the godly light comes down from a very high place, from what's called above the descending chain, what's called Seder Ishtalshelut, and this godly light, if I tap into it, charges me with the power of going out of my slavery. Because Yetziat Mitzrayim, going out of Egypt, is not necessarily going out of slavery from the country and running away. Rather, it signifies that every day I struggle with my limitations. Mitzrayim comes from the word limit. Every day I have to go out of my limitations. And every time that I do, I go out of my Egypt. And the days of Pesach, if I celebrate them the right way, as much as it looks like a prehistoric thing, then I tap into this godly light and I'm able to charge my spiritual battery for the rest of the year. I have the power to fight and to battle my limitations and to go out of my limitations. That's why the whole week of Pesach is extremely, extremely important. So every holiday has a certain power. And now we're coming to the holiday of Chanukah. Now amazingly you see that we have in our Torah 613 mitzvot that are coming from the Torah. But then we have another 7 mitzvot that come from our sages. And these mitzvot, our sages added. And, you know, for example, one of them is lighting a Shabbat candle, saying Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, doing Yeruv Chatzerot, Yeruv Tchumim, is the connection of two domains. So there are 7 mitzvot from our sages. The last one that they decided, the sages decided, is the mitzvah of lighting the candles of Chanukah. Meaning that lighting the candles of Chanukah is the last mitzvah in the list. If you go by the list, you read 613 mitzvot, then you go to the mitzvot of our sages, and the last one that came, mitzvah number 620, is lighting the candles of Chanukah. Which means that it completes the cycle, completes the order of mitzvot. Now, 620, the numerical value of 620, corresponds to the word keter. Keter is a crown, and the numerical value of keter is 620. When the Zohar is talking about the 620 mitzvot, it's calling it 620 pillars of light. The Zohar doesn't refer to the 630 mitzvot, rather it says there are 620 pillars of light. Meaning that if I have now a floor and I have a ceiling, the ceiling has to be supported by pillars, by columns. And if you remove one of the columns, the structure will fall, because an engineer will calculate the weight and the mass of the ceiling and says we need a column here, we need a column here. Maybe I'm using the wrong word by saying column. Maybe a pillar. But the engineer will tell you this is where we need a column. You can't move it. And if you want to move it, you have to create like a bridge, whatever. That, we're not going to get into the industrial part of it. But the ceiling has to be supported by the columns that are sitting on the ground. So the connection between the bottom and the top is by these columns or pillars. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai explains in the Zohar that what connects the world above to the world below is these 620 pillars of light, meaning that through each one of these pillars, light is a channel of light coming in and out or up and down. And each mitzvah corresponds to one of these pillars. And I explained many times in all my lectures that when a person is a God-fearing Jew and he follows all the Torah, then he has these 620 channels where he's getting his spiritual sustenance from. And if Chas v'Shalom a person chops off one of these pillars of light by doing the opposite of what Torah commands us, whether it's a positive mitzvah that he's not doing or a negative mitzvah that he is doing, negative not because it's negative to do, negative because it's a precept, then he's basically chopping off one channel. And then the light, the motion of the light coming up and down is being stopped. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that there are 620 pillars of light, meaning that the 620, he calls it Tarach Amudei Or. Tarach is 620. Tarach has the exact same letters of Keter. Kaf, Taf, Resh. The letters of Keter is the numerical value of it is 620. And Keter is a crown. Now we know in the 10 Sefirot that the highest Sefira is called Keter. In the teachings of Kabbalah, it explains that there's Keter, there's what's called Chitzoniuta Keter, the external part of the Keter, the rim, and then you have Pnimiuta Keter, the internal part of the crown. And everything originates from this Sefira. Everything comes down from Keter. Now, since these Sefirot, they go in a descending chain, there's also a light that comes above descending chain, which is called Me'al Seder Ishtalshelot, above the descending chain. Because everything that comes down to this world has to go through the Sefirot. The light of Chanukah comes from above descending chain. But, amazingly, you see, since that's the last mitzvah, that it closes the cycle of 620, we see that the light of Chanukah is connected to Sfirat HaKeter, to the light that comes from the Sfirat HaKeter. Now, as of now, we don't have a shine, a He'ara Elokit, a godly revelation from the Sfira. Right now, what we have is from Sfirat HaMalchut, from the lowest Sfira. Very soon, when Mashiach is going to come, the only He'ara Elokit, the only godly revelation we're going to have is going to be from Keter, which is going to be way above what we can handle. We can't even understand what this godly revelation means. That's the one out of many reasons why we do mitzvot, because the ultimate reward that we're going to get when Mashiach is going to come is that we're going to see God and godly revelation while we're in a body, like Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava were souls in bodies, and they were able to see godly revelations wherever they looked. They did not have the limitations we had. After they sinned, they went down in their level, and then they got their so to say, physical garments, the kutnot or, and then they went down in their level. And with the generations went down. But when Mashiach is going to come, we're going to go back to the level of Gan Eden, meaning that we're going to be in the same level of Adam HaRishon, that we're going to see godly revelations, meaning that we're going to see God everywhere. Ve'yada de'a aretz et Hashem. Everybody will see God everywhere, but we're still going to be in bodies. And this is the ultimate gilui elokut, the ultimate revelation, because you take something that is infinite, like a soul, and you put it into a body, in a limited, finite body. And it's the connection of completely two opposites. So this godly revelation is going to happen very soon when Mashiach is going to come. But in order for us to be able to sustain such a godly light, our bodies have to be prepared for that. And in order to prepare the bodies, that's why God gave us 620 mitzvot. So every mitzvah that I do, I'm refining my body, I'm polishing my body, that very soon, when this godly light is going to be revealed, I'm not going to be melted on the spot. That's why our sages... Excuse me? Yeah, but right now, your body is the one who's doing the mitzvah, and you don't feel your neshama. You do have a neshama in your body, but you don't feel it, and you don't operate in the level of your neshama. It's your body that is operating. The easiest way to explain it is just imagine being like Adam and Chava. They had a body, but they were talking and seeing God, and they saw godly revelation everywhere. They did not see the world how you see it. They saw it in a completely different level. Meaning the concept of a soul in a body, it is meaning that you feel your soul, but you're in a body. Now, you only feel your body, and you don't feel your soul. You don't communicate with your soul. Even though you are connected to your soul, but 99.9% of you is the body. The little connection that you have to something spiritual is your nefesh. We're not connecting with our soul. We're not thinking with our soul at this point. Our soul is extremely different than the body. But that's a whole different class. Bezrat Hashem, we will talk about that. But when Mashiach is going to come, our bodies have to be prepared for this light. Our sages say that when the Mashiach is going to come, Kadosh Baruch Hu motzi chama min artika, Kadosh Baruch Hu takes the sun out of its pocket, and the wicked people will be judged by it, and the tzaddikim will be healed by it. So the explanation to that in a better way is that the godly light will be revealed. Whoever doesn't have the vessels to sustain this light will just have to leave. Or in our terminology, will just melt or evaporate or disappear. But the tzaddikim, and it says, V'amech kulam tzaddikim, a person that follows the Torah, can be considered as a tzaddik. You don't have to be a born tzaddik. The tzaddikim will be healed by it. Rather, that whoever has mitzvot, the mitzvah creates a garment, a spiritual garment. So we will have so many spiritual garments that cover our body that we'll be able to sustain this godly revelation. And according to how many mitzvot I have, that's how close I will be able to get to the light. So if I all day long follow the Torah, and I all day long run after mitzvot and good deeds and acts of kindness and learning Torah, I will be able to go to stand closer to the light and derive much more godly revelation and much more spiritual pleasure. So that is only going to happen when Mashiach is going to come. But the godly revelation, this light is going to come from the Sefirah of Keter, and that's going to happen very soon when Mashiach is going to come. But amazingly, we see already that the light of Chanukah that shines on Chanukah comes from this Sefirah. Now, I spoke about it in the class about Kislev, that when Hashem created the world, He created the world with light. It says, Vayihi Or, there should be light, and then there was light. And it wasn't the light that you see from the sun or from the light bulbs. It was a very special light. If you look at the order of the creation of the world, the sun was created on the fourth day, not on the first day. So Hashem created the world with light, an unbelievable godly light, and then He saw how great the light is, and He removed it. And this is called Or HaGanuz, the concealed light. This light was shining for 36 hours. That's why if you look at the word Kislev, it has the letters Kaf and Samech, which is Kas. Kas comes from the word Kisui, something that covers. And Lev, Lamed Vav, is 36. So this 36 hours that the light was shining, Hashem removed this light, concealed it, and it says this light will shine in the future when Mashiach is going to come. This is called the Or HaGanuz. A glimpse of that light shows on Erev Shabbat. There are auspicious times that a spark from that light reveals itself in this world. One of them is Erev Shabbat, when a woman lights her candles. If you, exactly like you're saying in the class that I did, there are three types of lights. So this dark, the black light, what the Zohar is referring to, is a glimpse. You don't see it. Your neshama sees it. So there are times that this spark from this light shines. One of the times is the 8 days of Chanukah. We have some type of a revelation of this godly light, and we have it half an hour after the sun goes down when we sit next to the candles. We are obligated by halacha to sit next to the menorah for half an hour. This is the time that this godly light shines. Bezrat Hashem Motzei Shabbat, when we're going to have our first candle lighting, I am going to give a short class during that half an hour, what you have to do during the half an hour. You don't sit and eat donuts. So in that half an hour, there are certain things you want to do to tap in to this unbelievable godly light. There are certain things to read. We're going to do a whole class about it. You do not want to miss that. You eat the donuts after that. But in that half an hour, you want to really tap into this godly light, because this is a shine, a revelation from this concealed light, this Or HaGanuz. So this Or HaGanuz was concealed in the 6 days of creation, but would be revealed when Mashiach is going to come very soon, and we're going to enjoy this light on a daily basis. Till this is happening, then we're still receiving light from a much lower level. So we see that Chanukah is the holiday that completes all 620 mitzvot. So we learn from that Chanukah is connected to the light of Keter. Now, in Chanukah, there's a godly revelation from this light. We just need to know how to tap into it. The difference between Chanukah and Purim and the rest of the holidays is that the light that shines in the world during these festivals comes from a certain place, that the light is so great that we are obligated in not working. And it's not to make my life harder or like to give me a vacation. Rather, the light is so great that any type of labor that I do, I desecrate the holiness of the light. So on Shabbat, I have to stop from working. And on Yom Tov, I have to stop from working. Why? Because if I will do any type of melacha, any type of labor, what I do is like taking a beautiful diamond and smashing it with a hammer. Therefore, Hashem says, don't do anything. Don't do this, don't do that. Bezrat Hashem, when we start learning about all the laws of Shabbat, we're going to go each one of the 39 laws. Why are we not doing it? Because when you're reading on the laws, you can sow, you can plow, you can do all sorts of things that I don't have a feel. I'm not plowing. You're not allowed to cut the what's called ligzoz, to cut the sheep's wool. I don't have sheep. I buy sweaters in the store. So what does these 39 jobs, melachot, have to do with me? So every melacha that we're going to learn, what we're not allowed to do, we're also going to learn the spiritual meaning behind it, because there's a reason why we're doing that. It's not, again, not to annoy us. So the festivals and Shabbat, we're not allowed to work because I'm desecrating that godly light. But Chanukah and Purim, this light comes from a much higher and different place. Therefore, both Chanukah and Purim, I'm allowed to work. I celebrate the holiday, but I don't have a prohibition that I have to stop myself from doing any type of action. And that's because this light cannot be damaged. Nothing that you're going to do can actually affect this light. Therefore, I'm able to tap into it, but I don't have to stop. I don't have to not work. Now, just to go a little bit about the history of Chanukah to understand what's going on, because I want to understand, okay, Chanukah is a beautiful holiday, and I get donuts, and the kids get money, and we light candles, and it's a very special time, and Baruch Hashem, I don't have to not work for a whole week. But I want to know, my point is that everything that the Torah tells me to do, I want to know why, and I want to know what's in it for me. So I'm a Jew. I want to know what's in it for me. I want to know what's behind. Now, if I don't know what's in it for me, then I'm not going to do it with all my heart. If I understand what I can achieve, what happens in that time, I can focus on it and do it and derive something out of it. And I'm saying it in a joke, what's in it for me. But the reality is that when I became religious, I wanted to know. Why are you telling me to do that? Tell me why. I'll do it. I'll not only do it. I will want to do it because I understand what I'm getting out of it. It's almost like giving a person a dish to eat. What is that? Don't worry, it's healthy. Okay, but tell me why is it healthy? What is it good? Why is it good for me? It doesn't look so tasty. So I want to know what's happening on Chanukah that is changing something in me. And to understand that, I have to go a little bit about the history of Chanukah. Now, Chanukah happened about 2,200 years ago, at the middle of the period of the Second Temple. Now, the Second Temple was running for 420 years, and at the time, there was the Roman Empire was in control. The Greek Empire was in control, and at some point, it didn't work well. And the Greek, they started not to like what the Jews are doing. And they started to oppose all sorts of laws, and they started to oppress the Jews. They didn't like what the Jews are doing. Now, the Greek Empire, they came out to the world with a new philosophy, with a new teaching, with everything was new. Now, at the time, what caused this change, at that time, the biggest Yetzer Hara in the world was idol worship. And this is something that we cannot relate to. People think idol worship is bowing down on the floor to some statue. Our sages say that at the time that the idol worship was in power, people could not control themselves with the idol worship. It's something that we can only relate to is take the biggest desire and the biggest Yetzer Hara in our generation, times that 1,000, that was their urge for idol worship. It wasn't about bowing down to the statues. First of all, the statues would talk. They would do things. They weren't just a piece of metal, a stone or metal. And the drive, this draw to the idol, was almost impossible. To a point that almost everybody had idols in their home. It's almost like Lehavdil Elef Avdalot, in our generation, almost every home has internet, and almost anyone can fail like that in the internet. That's why all all our greatest rabbi in our generation, in this generation, are saying don't bring internet into your home. Because yes, you can use it as a very powerful tool. But on the other hand, if you misuse it, you go to the depths of the depth of Gehenom with this place, with this thing. So all our chachamim, all our rabbis in our generation says, don't bring it into your home. Don't have it in your phone. Don't even put it in front of you, because the tava, the desire to what's behind and in, can be devastating. So if you don't know how to control it, don't use it. So then this is nothing compared to the desire that they had at the time for idol worship. That's how strong idol worship was. That's why 80% of the Jews did not want to leave Mitzrayim even. They were like, I don't care about these miracles that your God is making. I want to stay with these gods. And in the time of Mitzrayim, the Zohar says, actually the statues would talk, they would predict things. The point is that at the time, the idol worship was extremely, extremely powerful. So came the sages at the time, Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and they were able to annul the power of idol worship. They were like, we're going to switch the Yetzer Hara. We don't want this Yetzer Hara anymore because it's killing everybody. And the sages are so powerful, they are able to change something in the world. They were able to cancel the Teava, the desire for idol worship. And they did it. But when you cancel something out, Hashem says, listen, I created the world that you have to battle something. So a new Yetzer Hara came. And the new Yetzer Hara came, that is called Malchut Yavan, the rulership, the kingdom of Greece. Now, we're looking at it in the physical level, that it's a country, an empire that came and started opposing their laws. But there's an entire mystical explanation of the Greek. Now, what is this empire? What was their thing? Geographically, if you look at the empire of Greece, it was divided in three. One city was called Sparta, one city was called Macedonia, and one city was called Athens, Atuna. These were the three major mechozot, like counties in Greece. And each one stands for one thing that the Greeks were about. And they brought down to the world, again, this new Yetzer Hara, this new concept that they could be some type of a reality without God. And all about the pleasures of this world. This is the Malchut Yavan. Is first of all, there's no God. Second of all, we have our own wisdom. And more than that, the pleasures of the world. We can enjoy this world, live your life, enjoy every day, and so forth. And each one of these cities brought down one type of power. The first city that is called Sparta, that we learn from that, what did the Greek brought into the world? Sports. They brought the Olympics. They started developing all these types of sports. That people will, instead of sitting and learning or doing something useful, they would sit like couch potatoes and watch a certain sport. And up until today, this klipa is controlling 80% of the population of the world, is the klipa of the sports. That people are sitting like this, 50 million people are glued to a screen to see a bunch of men running on a field throwing a piece of leather. And it might seem like something if you stop for a second and you're saying at I don't even know how it's called, prime time, whatever time it's called, you know, to put an ad in the Super Bowl in the main part of the game, you're talking about $30-40 million for 1 minute. Why? Because you have millions of people like this glued to a screen. That can only be possible with the power of a klipa, something that can control 100 million people in one shot. So the klipa of this sport came from the part of Yavan, from the city of Sparta. They developed the power that a person can be completely shut down, go completely cuckoo about something that has to do with, so to say, the power of my body. Because sports is all about the body. If your body is well developed, you're going to be better in what you do. So whatever type of sport you look at, then it's a competition. I'm stronger, I'm faster, I'm bigger, I'm more sophisticated, I'm able, like if you're looking really at sports, some of the things that they're doing is unbelievable. I mean, you see these people, if I'm going to have to throw a ball into a basket, it will take me 50 attempts before I put it in the basket. You see them like throwing it from all directions, their skills are unbelievable. You see people, they kick a ball from the other side of the field and it goes into the goalie or in any other things. And I'm not separated from this klipa. I used to train in martial arts for 17 years. I know 17 years, my skills were so developed that your body can become a machine if you make your body this idol. And to be a number one athlete, you are becoming, your body is your idol. You all day long, you're training like a machine. Forget about that right now. I'm just painting the concept of what the idea of Yavan, what they brought to the world. I'm not going to start analyzing it. I'm actually into sport. Sport is healthy. You have to do some activities. It's not healthy not to do anything. I send my kids to do sports, but when you do it for the health, once a week, and to stay in shape. Yeah, no, if you're doing it for your own self...
The klipa is when you're so sucked in.
Exactly.
You're not doing anything, you're sitting on your
exactly.
body, you're spending hundreds of dollars on tickets.
Exactly. Not only that, it's two things here. First of all, it's the person, is the athlete himself that trains... For hours. When I was in my prime time in my sports, I would train for 8 hours every day. That's idolizing 8 hours every day. It's idolizing a lot of people will contradict me and tell me you're extreme. If I train 8 hours a day to become number one, I'm idolizing my body to make it a machine to be able to win. And to be a real good athlete, that's the amount of hours you have to train. Doesn't matter what sport you do. A, you have to have the talent. B, you have to have the physique. Then you have to have the extreme of training like a machine. Now comes a different part of it, is the ones who are behind the screen that are like, "Huh," and people kill. I mean, you see football games in England, they kill each other if Chas v'Shalom, their team loses. So it goes to an extreme. So I don't want to go too much about the sports. I want to concentrate on Yavan and on Hanukkah. But the Greek, it says in Hebrew, Malchut Yavan. Malchut comes from, it's a kingdom, but it's the translation is wrong. I would call it now the power of Greek. It comes with a few different types of klipot. So one of them came from the city of Sparta. Sparta comes from the word sport. This is where it was all developed. Then comes the city of Macedonia. The city of Macedonia was about power and ruling. And you see that who came from the city of Macedonia? The great Alexander Mogdon, that came to control the world and to conquer the world. And this is the concept of power and controlling. This is another klipa. And this klipa you see that it's in our generation where it manifests is control, is the power of controlling. And you see where it can be governments, it can be countries, it can be certain individuals that they have this drive to control, and they control. I mean, there are governments that are controlling their people, there are companies that are controlling the markets. Somebody not too long ago sent me a beautiful image that you see in the image about 200 logos of all the food companies in America. And in the middle, it shows 10 names, and it says these 10 companies are all the food products in America. So you have like 200, 300 brands, 10 companies control all these brands. And they're all corrupt, and they put in your food whatever they want, and 99.9% of that food is controlled by these companies, they're all corrupt. Pepsi or Coca-Cola, I don't remember the names, it doesn't really matter. Nestle or whatever, and why? That's the power of control. I'm controlling everything. TV networks, news networks, they control everything. So this klipa from Macedonia is the power of controlling, that we have it in every generation. And the third city is the city that is called Atuna, Athens. And that was all the philosophy, the wisdom, the chokhmah. But what did it bring to the world? It brought to the world the type of wisdom that says we're more smarter than the Creator. We don't want the wisdom of the Creator. It's our own. We develop the wisdom, and you see that all this wisdom, it brought down, you know, philosophy and math and hindsight in English. Engineer, not engineering. There's another word. Excuse me.
Logic.
Not logic, but there's for example, when I was in high school and we would learn a law in mathematics, Pythagoras, the law of Pythagoras,
geometry,
all this chokhmah, they came from the Greek, and they're basically saying, we don't want the wisdom of the Creator. We have our own wisdom, and this klipa is the most powerful and deadliest klipa in our generation. Is that people, they become so smart in a certain trade that their wisdom pushes them away from Hashem. So you see very intelligent people. You see people that go to university for 20 years. They're beyond intelligent. Their level of intelligence is not normal because of so much learning they do. And the more intelligent they become, the further away they go from God. Because God's wisdom has nothing to do with the chokhmah, the wisdom of this world. And it becomes a complete opposition. So these three cities, this is the type of power, this klipa that Malchut Yavan brought to the world. And of course they wanted to control the Jews. That's why they went head to head. Because the Jews were like, we have our own wisdom, we have the Torah, we don't bow to anything, we don't idol anything. And we don't want to control anything. There's one ruler to the world. So it totally went against Judaism. And the Greeks didn't like that. So this is what they brought down to the world. And of course, with that, it manifested into the world that they wanted to control the Jews. Now, they didn't tell the Jews, we want to kill you. They told them, we don't mind, you can live here. We just don't want you to follow your rules. Now, you can learn your Torah. We're not going to bother you. But don't practice the weird things. Don't do Brit Milah. Don't eat kosher. Don't keep family purity. Don't go to the mikveh. These things we don't like. Learn your Torah as a wisdom. But we don't want you to practice the weird things. And they came to oppress the Jews by saying, we don't want you to do that anymore. That's why we read, we're going to read it next week. What did they do, the Evanim? It says, Lehashkicham Toratecha, to make you forget your Torah. That's what they wanted to do. They didn't want to kill us. Haman wanted to kill us. Hitler, Yimach Shemo, wanted to kill us. Everybody wants to kill us. Paro wanted to slave us and kill us. The Greek says, we're not looking to bury dead bodies here. We want to kill your soul. We want to uproot your connection from the master of the universe. That's what they wanted to do. This is the new Yetzer Hara that came down to the world. And up until today, that's the Yetzer Hara that we're dealing with. The Chokhmah of the world, these klipot that we cannot control in this world. And they look very, very, very friendly. Now it says that Esav, we just learned about him this week in the parasha, we learned about him last week in the parasha, we learned how Esav hates Yaakov. This is halacha. Esav sonel Yaakov. This is halacha. But there's two types of ways how Esav comes to Yaakov. This week, what did we learn? The first shiur about our parasha, that Esav made peace with Yaakov. He hugged him, he kissed him, he invited him to live with him. This is the dangerous Esav. There are two types of Esav. When Yaakov was coming towards Esav, he said to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, "Hatzileni na me'achi miyedei Esav." Why are you saying it twice? Because Yaakov says first, "Hatzileni na me'achi," when Esav is my brother. That's the dangerous Esav, when Esav is nice to you. Then he says, "Hatzileni from Esav." That's the one who hates me. How they say in English? You save me from my enemies. No, how does it say? I'll save myself from my enemies, you save me from my friends. Something like that, right? Is that a saying like that? Something like that. You know what I mean. The point is that in Hebrew they say, you save me from, I'll save myself from my enemies, you save me from my loved ones. Because my loved ones, you know, when somebody loves you, you don't see how dangerous they can be. So Esav, when he's Esav, he's an enemy. He's straight to your face, and you know how to fight with him. But when is Esav dangerous? when he's achi, when he's my brother, when he comes and smiles at you. Now we just learn how Esav was nice to Yaakov. And he was like, come and live with me and move into my land and I'll share everything with you. That's when Esav becomes dangerous, and that's when we are in danger. And that's why the Klipa of Yavan is the nice Esav. Because it comes and tells you, I'm not here to kill you, I'm only here to glue you to a screen. And I'm not here to kill you, I only want you to learn 10 years some philosophy that doesn't make sense even. So it's a very nice Esav, it's a very sophisticated and dangerous Klipa, because it comes very friendly. There's nothing wrong in learning in public school, and learning math and biology and chemistry and science. What, you only want to learn prehistoric things? So it's a very sophisticated Klipa that comes in a very sneaky way. And this is the Klipa of Yavan, and this is also called the Galut, the exile of Yavan. Now, what does that got to do with me? So we know that we operate in three different levels. These three different levels are called Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. These are three levels of my soul. We spoke about many times that our soul has five levels, starting from the top, which is Yechida, then goes to Chaya. These two levels are separated from the body, has nothing to do with the body. Then we have the level of Neshama, and Ruach, and Nefesh. These are three levels that I basically operate in this world. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai explains in the Zohar that for each level, each piece of this Neshama is in somewhere in the body. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that the Nefesh is in the liver, the Ruach is in the heart, and the Neshama is in the head. This is the what's called the Mishkan, where this piece is dwelling. This is called Moach Lev Kaved. If a person is following the Torah, and the Moach, the brain, that starts with the letter Mem, and then the Lev, the heart, that starts with the letter Lamed, and the Kaved, the liver, that starts with the letter Kaf, it's operating the right way, it creates the word Melech. That's why we're operating in this world in the level what's called Malchut, because when my mind, my heart, and my liver are operating the right way, when I'm saying operating the right way, I'm utilizing my brain, my heart, and my liver for Avodat Hashem, for serving God, not for other things. And then I'm connected to the level of Malchut, and I can actually do something in this world. The problem is that each and every one of these three territories, they move away opposite from serving God. Now we know that Shlomo HaMelech says, Zeh Lumat Zeh Bara Elokim. Hashem created everything with what's called a Lumat Zeh, something that will stand against something else. You have positive, you'll have negative right away. Anything that you have in the side of Kedusha, of holiness, you'll have in the side of unholiness, of the other side of Kedusha, of Tumah. So for example, one out of many, there was Moshe Rabbeinu, who was standing on the side of Kedusha. Then the other side of Moshe Rabbeinu was Bilam. He was the other side of the Tumah. Our sages say that Bilam was in such a high level that if he would direct his energy to Kedusha, it would be greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. So there's always what's called the Lumatze, the good and the bad. And they're constantly fighting each other. So the Lumatze of the Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama are three klipot, are three powers that they come to battle us. And each one of them is corresponding to one level. So one corresponds to the level of the Nefesh, one in the Ruach, one in the Neshama. One is in the liver, one is in the heart, one is in the brain. Now, the Nefesh, which is the lowest one, this is the hardest one, and the most lowest level to deal with. Now, what is the power, so to say, the tchuna, what signifies the Nefesh? David HaMelech says, Tzama lecha nafshi. Nafshi comes from the word Nefesh. Tzama lecha nafshi. Tzama is a thirst. Is something that I'm yearning, something that I don't have and I want. The Nefesh is constantly in the motion of some type of desire that it needs something for itself. Now, if I'm giving my Nefesh Kedusha, holiness, then I'm fulfilling the need of my Nefesh. But if I don't, the Nefesh constantly needs something. It has constantly a thirst. Now, if I'm not giving my nefesh the right sustenance, which is kedusha, it will birth what's called teva, a desire, a lust for something. Because the motion of the nefesh is constantly to desire something. So if I'm filling my nefesh with holiness, with Torah and mitzvot, then I'm calming its thirst down. If I don't, it will birth desires. So I'll desire food. I'll desire worldly pleasures. I will desire all sorts of things that will be out of control. This is the level of nefesh. Tzama lecha nafshi. And this corresponds to the level of the klipa that we're going to call it now, Sparta, the city of Greece. This desire for pleasuring my body. We explained it in the level of sports, but the level there was only about the physical pleasures. This corresponds to the level of nefesh. Now, the next level is the ruach. The ruach, we said the mishkan, the place where it says is in the heart. This corresponds to what's called gvura, to the constantly the urge of controlling. Now, if you take the power of gvura, of severity, of controlling, in kedusha, where I have to do it in my heart, the gvurot are in my heart, is that I have to conquer my desires. We mentioned it amazingly last shiur, I quoted a Mishnah that says, Ezo agibor, akoveshet yitzro. Who is the agibor, a brave person, that is able to conquer his desires? So this power of gvura, when it's utilized in kedusha, then it means me overpowering my inclination. I want to do this certain thing, this certain act that is prohibited, I'm conquering it. I pull down a screen. I overpower my desire. I'm constantly battling my teavot, my inclinations, my things that I desire and I lust for. Whether it's food, whether it's any type of pleasure, whether it's to do something prohibited. So when this power is directed for gvura, for kedusha, it's conquering the negative things. But it's when it's directed to tum'ah, to the other side of holiness, again, this comes from the level of Macedonia, of this control, that I need to control things, but in the negative way. So where would it manifest into to the world in the negative way? Controlling another person, becoming constantly the angry. All these character traits that come from that klipa is anger and frustration and screaming and punishment. All these negative character traits. Then we know many people that they don't have a control over their anger. Unfortunately, half the people in the world, they don't have control over their anger. All you need to do is push one button and they flip out. Then they calm down, maybe. But the reality, the sad reality, is when we all have this drive of this control, to control somebody else, what it will birth, usually it will birth anger. Anger and all this, the character trait that comes from anger. Which is called gvurot. So this corresponds to the level of ruach. Then comes the level of neshama. And neshama comes from the level of mochin, of chokhmah. This is the hardest one. Because the klipa, the leumat zeh, that comes from the city, the level of atuna, of the chokhmah, that's the one that is the hardest one to levarer, to fix. Why? Because nefesh, what it comes from my own desires and my self pleasures, I can see it right away. I know right away when I'm drawn to do something that is prohibited by the Torah. I right away see that it's a sin. It's very simple to detect. When it comes to gvurot, okay, that's a little bit harder for me to overcome my anger or to overcome my jealousy or to overcome my sadness. That's a little bit hard, but I can still see right away the difference. When it's in the level of the neshama, the level of chokhmah, it's very, very hard. It's very hard for me now to differentiate between the chokhmah of the Torah and the chokhmah of the world, and to not be fooled by the chokhmah of the world. So this is a very hard level to refine, what's called to do the birur. The birur of the nefesh is very easy. I mean, nothing is easy, but easy to see the birur that I have to do. And the birur of the ruach is also, birur is to sift and to refine. The birur of the neshama, that's already a much harder level. Now, the whole concept of the klipa of Yavan is to cover what's called hashgacha pratit. When a person has no connection to Hashem, he doesn't see the supervision of Hashem. That is the whole motion of the Chochmah of Yavan. That's why the Chochmah, the level of the Neshama, is very, very refined, because it doesn't make me do something, so to say, wrong. Just it just covers the whole point of Hashgacha Prati. There's no Hashem. There's just live in this world. Don't believe that there's something out there in the universe that's controlling things and moving things, and that my entire life is divine providence and ruled by Hashgacha Prati. That was the concept of Malchut Yavan. Now, again, we want to see what does that got to do with me, and how is it affecting me, and how is that connected to Hanukkah, and what am I taking out of it? Now, we know that our entire Torah is based on words and on letters. The entire teachings of Kabbalah is called Torat HaOtiyot, the teachings of letters. Everything is about letters. We see that everything that we learn, the words, the blessings, the prayers, it's all about a composition of a bunch of letters. Bechlal, we know that the world was created with speech, Ba'asara Ma'amarot Nivra Olam, with 10 speeches the world was created. Hashem creates the world with the power of speaking, corresponding to the Sfira of Malchut. That this is how the Hashem creates the world. He takes a bunch of letters, like a coder, like a programmer, puts them together, and he creates a code, and he creates a world. It says, La'atid lavo, in the time when Mashiach comes, we're going to learn Torah from thousands of years. Why? Because we're going to take one letter out of the Torah, and we're going to dissect it, thousands and thousands of levels of the depth of the Torah that is in one letter. Now, even though we only have 22 letters, but when you put three letters together, that creates a different combination. Now it's a whole different thing to learn from. But it says that how are we going to learn Torah for thousands of years? Because every letter can take thousands of years to dissect and to learn. So the letters are holding in it all the code of the universe. Everything is in the letters. And of course, everybody likes, you know, all the numerical values, all the gimatriot, and how you see how it's all connected to each other. But we know that the foundation and the basics of the teachings of the Torah is hiding behind these letters. So the same way, every motion, every act, every thought that we do corresponds to a letter. So we know that the midah of chokhmah that corresponds to the level of neshama, the letter that corresponds to that is the letter Yud. And we learn it from when it says, Az Yashir Moshe. And the sages are asking, why Yashir will sing in present, in future? The Torah should say, Moshe Shar. He now, he sang before. Why Yashir? Because it's talking about the future, when Mashiach is going to come, how then with the Torah is going to be revealed. But from that we learn that in the level of Chochmah, Moshe was the level of Chochmah, that the Yud, the level of Chochmah, which corresponds to our Neshama, that corresponds to the letter Yud. Now, next to, and we said before, that the Chochmah corresponds to Neshama, and of course that corresponds to one of the cities of a Greek, which was Atuna. Very well. The next midah that we talked about was the midah that's in our heart, the ruach. The letter that corresponds to the midah of ruach that's in the heart is the letter vav. Right? The Zohar says that whatever that we feel in our heart is a birth, comes down from our thought. So what does it basically do? It takes the yud of the thought and it pulls it down into the heart. So it creates the letter vav. The third midah that we talked about, corresponding to the nefesh, which we said sits in the dwelling in the liver, which was corresponding in the lo'umatzeh, to the city of Sparta, the letter that corresponds to that is the letter Nun, but not the regular Nun, rather the Nun Sofit. And why is that the Nun Sofit? Because it takes the Yud and the Vav and it pulls it down under the line. If you look at the Nun Sofit, all the letters are going on a line, and the Nun Sofit goes underneath the line. It goes below. There's a few letters that go under the line. But the Nun is basically pulling down the Vav down into the depth, because the Nefesh, we explained that it's the lowest part. Even in the body, it's the lowest part of the body, from, the lowest organ from the heart and the brain. So I'm basically taking the Yud from the Chokhmah, after I pulled it down to the heart and I created a Vav, I'm pulling it even more down, and I'm creating the letter that is called Nun Sofit. And amazingly, the character trait of the Nun Sofit is going underneath the line. It's not staying on the line. It's really pulling all the way down. Now, the Nun Sofit, this is the main birur that we have to do. This is the depth of what our neshama goes down to. Our neshama gets pulled down to the lowest, lowest place. Now, these letters, if you take the Yud of Chochmah and the Vav of the Ruach, of our heart, and the Nun, what word does it create? Yavan, which is Greek, Greece in Hebrew. It's called Malchut Yavan. This is the Klipa of Yavan. So these three letters, they form, and you look, if you're looking at them, they're all the same shape, but they're like sticks. If you're writing it in the script type. So the Yud is a little chupchik, the Vav is a little bit longer, and the Nun is even longer, but you have three sticks, so to say, that they go from above to below. One is short, one is middle, one is long. So the three letters that correspond to these three midot, they form the word Yavan. Now, what does that got to do with me? Because I have to levarer my nefesh and my ruach and my neshama. I came down to this world to refine something. And you see, amazingly, that the Leumatze of Yavan, I don't know if any of you have the habit of reading Shir HaShirim on Erev Shabbat, and many times I say that it's an unbelievable, powerful thing to do, is Erev Shabbat to read Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs from Shlomo HaMelech, and it says there, Yonati Bechagvei HaSela. And it's Yonati is my pigeon, my dove, in the cracks of the stones. Chagvei HaSela is like these, the cracks in between. And you've seen many times, it's talking about the Jews, we are compared to a dove. And this dove corresponds basically to Nishmot Israel. We see many different places it's talking about a dove. What is this Yonah? If you look at the word dove in Hebrew, is Yonah. Yonah has the letters of Yud, Vav, Nun. It has the Yavan, but it also has the Hey of the letter of Yud Kei Vav Kei, the word of Yud Kei Vav Kei. If I'm able to refine all three levels of my Neshama, Ruach, and Nefesh, and refine and elevate the level of the Klipa, then I pull into me the letter of Hey, which is the last Hey of the letter of the word Yud Kei Vav Kei, which corresponds to the level of Malchut. We spoke about it before, that's where I'm operating in this world. So if I'm doing what I'm supposed to do in regards to refining these three levels, then I receive this Hey, then Yavan becomes Yonah, and Yonah is a dove. So my main avodah is to enlight these three letters with the Torah. So I can take these three levels of the Klipa and elevate them to their source, and to transform it to be holy, and instead of being coming from the Reshut, from the domain of unholiness. The time to do that, the auspicious time for me to reach out and to get the power to pull all these three Klipot out of their depth and to elevate them, is in the time of Chanukah. And especially at the half an hour that we're lighting the candles. At the time that we're lighting our candles, it says, according to Halakha, that when do we have to light the candles? It says half an hour after the sunset, But the term that the Talmud is talking about is kshetichle regel min hashuk, that the last foot leaves the market. Because in the olden days they didn't have lights. When the sun would go down, it would be dark, everybody leaves the market. So when the last person leaves the market, means it's completely dark, that's when you light the candles. But amazing, you see something amazing here, we're going to learn about it later, that it's talking about regel. Why it should say, when the last person leaves the market. Why is it saying regel? Regel is a leg. So it's talking about, we're going to learn it soon, in the next class, the Rizal explains why dafka regel, why is the leg. But the leg is the lowest place, the foot is the lowest place of the body. And that's the connection between the body and the earth. And then when I have to take my foot, my leg, and separate it from the ground. And the time that I actually do that, and the time that I get the power to do that for the rest of the years, is in the eight days of Hanukkah. This is the power that I'm take these three levels of unholiness of the klipa and elevate them into kedusha. So what is that got to do with me? How is Chanukah corresponding to me? That Chanukah is about shedding light to the nun sofit, to the lowest nun that goes underneath the line. All the rest of the letters are on the line. But the nun, in the level of chokhmah, because we said before that the nefesh that corresponds to the worldly pleasures, that I can differentiate. I see the differences. In the ruach, when it comes to gvurot, I can see very simple. When in the chokhmah, when it's very refined, and I cannot see the difference, that's why I have to shine the most of the godly light, because this is corresponding to the nun sofit, to the last nun that is under the line. And the time for me to do that is on the eighth day of Hanukkah. So every day of the light days of Hanukkah, when I'm lighting the candles, then we see that amazingly that what signifies the holiday of Hanukkah is the candles. Purim, we read the Megillah. On Sukkot, we build the sukkah. On Pesach, we eat matzahs. On Hanukkah, we light candles. We light light. It's the candles of light. In Hebrew, it's also called the holiday of light. So what I have to derive out of this 8 days is that in the half an hour that I'm sitting in front of the lights, it's not about eating the donuts or answering my WhatsApps next to the lights. We're going to talk about it on Motzei Shabbat. What do I have to do? But I have to tap into this half an hour that I can reach to the highest level, the highest godly revelation, and by that I'm enlightening. And what I'm doing is I'm creating he'ara in the letter of the nun sofit. That what it does is the complete opposite of what the Yevanim wanted to do. They wanted to lashkicham torotecha, to make me forget my Torah. That in how is that corresponding to me in my day to day? That I don't all day long think of Hashem. I don't all day long connected to the Torah. If you sit all day long and learn Torah, you're connected. But all day long when you are busy with many things, you have to make a living, you have to educate your kids, you have to make dinner, you have to clean your home, your mind is not going thinking of Hashem all day long. And then it's very easy for the chokhmah of the world to slide in very quietly and to confuse you. Oh, now I have to do this, now I have to learn, I have to learn a trade right now because I have to make money, because I have to feed my kids. Yeah, it's good, it's fine to learn a trade, but don't idolize it. Don't separate it from the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who's giving you parnasa. So in the level of chokhmah, the refinement, why is it said that the nun goes beneath the line? Because it goes in a very hidden way. That the chokhmah of the world, the wisdom of the world, moves me away from the chokhmah of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's exactly what the Greeks wanted to do, is to make me forget my Torah, lashkicham torotecha, to make me forget that there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Learn the Torah, do a few mitzvot here and there, but don't think that it's coming from the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we're done in a minute. And the whole year, that's what I'm fighting. Yes, I'm fighting in the level of nefesh with my yetzer hara, with my teavot, what my nefesh is yearning and thirsty for. And I'm fighting also the level of my ruach, of my gvorot, is the severity and the kas and the what's called hakpada, is being angry and jealous all year long. All year long I'm fighting that. And all year long I'm also fighting this very refined level of my yetzera is trying to tell me that's not so important. This mitzvah is not so important to do. That is not really a halacha. This is a hider. This is not so important. It's more important right now for you to go and do this. It's more important for you to do that. Instead of watching an hour class online, let me watch a football game, let me watch a movie. To get you, you know, Yetzirah is going to come and tell you, you need to relax, you need to unwind. Don't watch don't go to a Torah class right now. Watch a 2-hour movie. So the point is that I have to fight it all day long. All year round I have to fight these three levels. The time for me to get the boost, the charge, to be able to fight it for the entire year, is in the eight days of Hanukkah, at the half an hour when I'm lighting candles. And when I tap into this godly light, I'm able to bring to me the power that all year round, I will be able to reveal this light that comes from the Sefirah of Keter. A lot of you were not here in the beginning when I said that Hanukkah is directly connected to the Sefirah of Keter, because we have 613 mitzvot from the Torah and 7 mitzvot from our sages. And this is forming 620 mitzvot. Keter is the numerical value of 620. And the 7 mitzvot from our sages, the last one that was given was the mitzvah of Hanukkah. So the mitzvah of Hanukkah closed the cycle. It creates the Keter. It forms the 620. It's the 620 mitzvah. So we know that Hanukkah, the Heara, the godly shine, comes in Hanukkah, comes from the Sefirat HaKeter. So I want in these 8 days to empower the light, the godly revelation that comes from Sefirat HaKeter. A, it refines my neshama, ruach, and nefesh. More than that, why was there a victory? Because they fought in Mesirut Nefesh. The self-sacrifice of their fight enabled them to win. I mean, there were a couple of yeshiva bachers fighting an army. The Hashmonaim, when you think of it, they were kohanim. They were priests. They know how to shecht animals. They know how to create a korban. They know how to fight. It's some skinny yeshiva bachers that they took them to the army. How did they win? Because they had Mesirut Nefesh. And by them having Mesirut Nefesh, they were able to bring down this godly revelation that comes from the Sefirat HaKeter, and they were able to win a whole army. So the power of Hanukkah is also called the holiday of redemption, Chag HaGeulah. Why? Because if I do the right work on Hanukkah, I'm able to bring down this godly revelation from Sefirat HaKeter that we will have at the time of Mashiach. So it's a very auspicious time to hasten the Geulah with my action. So Bezrat Hashem, we're going to learn much more about Hanukkah, but the main thing to remember is that in the half an hour when you light your candles, you don't concentrate on the donuts. Rather, you concentrate on how am I tapping into this light that is above descending chain, that is enabling me to charge my neshama for the rest of the year with the power to overcome all these three levels of the klipot, and to be able to fight it in all three levels of my nefesh, ruach, and neshama, and by that I'm achieving a godly revelation coming from Sefirat HaKeter. And with that, Bezrat Hashem, we will be enjoying the revelation of Sefirat HaKeter in the coming of Mashiach that should happen very soon.